ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Allah has chosen the method of love to bring us towards Him. And He wanted us to recognize at the very outset that Allah loves us. And by realizing that, a person would have the best chance of reaching his potential and going towards Allah. In the Munajat of Shabaniya of Imam Ali alayhi salam, when we see that, salam, Imam says in that Allah, I do not have power to stop myself from disobeying you, from going towards sin, from going towards ma'siyat. I do not have the power to do that. The only time that I have the power to stop myself from sinning, from doing wrong, from disobeying you, is those moments of my life when I realize that you love me. A person, really, you and I do not have the power to stop ourselves from sinning. You don't have it. Unless we realize, and at those moments that we realize, that Allah loves me. And it is this realization and knowledge that Allah loves me which makes a person strong enough not to disobey Allah. So hence, our discussion is not about us loving Allah. We don't love Allah, and looking at the experience and history of mankind, very few people have reached the stage of loving Allah. Very few people have done it. You will look at the prophets and the imams, those who are known as awliya. When you look at them, then you see them having love for Allah. Allah did not want us to go and search and try to fall in love with Him, because if He had asked us to do that, we would be struggling all our lives and would never reach that plateau. So Allah did not want us to go after that. What Allah wanted us to do is to see that it's Allah who loves you. And if you can understand that much, that Allah loves me, then you know what? This is the beginning of the path. So loving Allah is the destination, not the beginning. Allah loving you is where we start. That's where we start growing. And if we haven't recognized that yet or realized that yet, then we haven't started growing yet. Maybe that would answer the question that everyone has in their minds, that I've been praying for so long, I've been doing good for so long, why is it that I don't feel any closer to Allah? Because we were always looking at me loving Allah instead of Allah loving me. That is where the mistake lies. So let's go a little bit deeper into this and ponder over it. If you can have a loud salawat. So now, when we look at this, we see that one of the outcome, a product of this method of recognizing Allah loves me, is that when a person practices Islam, when he obeys Allah, stays away from haram, or does his wajibat, you see that he does not get tired if he does it out of the fact that Allah loves him. Every other method will make you tired. If you are praying because of hellfire, you are tired of prayer. If you are praying to go to Jannah, you are tired. You know, it's like, for example, working without a paycheck. You know, and the boss is saying, it's coming. And you're like looking at them and saying, when? Right? That's what happens. You get tired. You get frustrated. Right? Any method that you use to go closer to Allah, you're going to get frustrated. The only method that makes you fresh all the time and every time is the method of love. This is the method. And the difference between the two, right, should be noticed. I want you to note this difference so you know what the difference is. You see, in all the other methods, whether it's fear or reward or conscience or anything else that is used for tarbiyat and training us and nurturing us, you will see that basically you're starting off with a empty plate and you're asked to go about in life to fill it up. You see, you start off with an empty plate saying, listen, in order for you to go to Jannah, here's the empty plate, and now you fill up the things that you have to take. So now you start off with an empty plate and your whole life you're working to fill it up. Right? This is all the other methods. But in Allah's love, this is what happens. You don't start off with an empty plate. You start off with a full plate at the beginning of your life and you go about in life eating from that plate. See, there's a big difference, right? In these two things, right? Starting off empty and trying to fill yourself up, or starting out full and working to take from that. This is the difference between knowing and practicing through knowing that Allah loves you and all the other ways that you have been taught from this member and any other member that you have been to. Right? All the other books you have read, you see it's all about like heaven, hell, reward, fear. And what happened is that a person, which is also a method Allah uses, right? But it's not the method that's the most effective. Let me add something to that if you send the salawats. My friends, when you know that you are loved, you know, if you know right now, you know, that there's someone who loves you. Right now, I tell you, you know, and you know, you can experiment with young kids, you know, not young kids, teenagers. Hey, you know, that one person is looking at you. You see, now this person, knowing that someone is watching him, someone loves him, someone cares about him, or someone is actually looking at him, now you see, his walk would be different. He would walk differently. If you know that someone is supporting you from behind and that someone has your back, your life will be different. Your whole attitude in your life is going to be different. Like, wow, you know, really? Yeah. Someone who has a crush on you, you know? You're like, wow. And then you see your whole attitude is different. Your whole way of life is different. Why is that? That's what happens when you are loved. When you are cared for. Your whole life changes. Everything about you changes. Now you walk with a spring in your feet. You know, there's that, you know, you're galvanized. You have that extra inspiration in you. This is what happens when you know that you're loved. If a person starts off knowing that he's loved, it's a whole different thing. It's a whole different thing. You know, many people go for ziyarat for many reasons. They go to Karbala for many reasons. Some people go there, you know, to ask Imam Hussein for things. You know, say that, you know, Imam, I have this hajat. And it is said that if you go to Karbala and pray, under the dome in which the dhari of Imam Hussein is, any dua and haja that you make will be answered there. And it's true. It's really true. Go and ask and try for yourself. If you make that dua right then and there, it will be answered for you. But if you go there for that reason, you'll see you'll have a different attitude. If you go there, for example, because you want to get reward, and it's said that if you go to Karbala, the reward of going to Karbala is more than 70 Hajj. Wow, 70 Hajj, can you imagine that? One Hajj is difficult. Ask me about it, right? It's difficult, one Hajj. You know, half of the difficulty is dealing with Saudis. Right? And Allah is saying, you don't need to deal with Saudis, man. You don't even need to wash their faces. Just go to Karbala, right? So someone goes to Karbala and says that, wow, I'll go to Karbala and reward of 70 Hajj. That's also a reason why people go, which is fine, which is good. But then, if a person goes there, if you had the choice why you're going to Karbala, you sign up with a caravan and you want to go to Karbala and you want to think now, why do you want to go? Do you want to go for reward? It's good. You want to go because you want to ask something for Imam Hussein? That's good. You want to make duas over there? That's good. All of this is good. But what if you go there because Imam Hussein wants you to come? Knowing that Imam Hussein loves you and he wants you to come. Now you see your going is going to be completely different than in any way else. See, my friends, this is the difference between walking through life knowing that you're loved and walking through life trying to get reward and jannat. This is the difference. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. When we know that Allah loves us and start off our life like that, then the only thing we have to do is respond to Allah's love. Just respond. Say, I love you too. Allah didn't send you on the earth to go and try and fall in love with Allah and Ahlul Bayt. You might be saying, but Mawlana, it says in the Quran we should love Ahlul Bayt. Yes, we should. But you think you're going to fall in love with them just like that? You know how difficult that is? How hard that is to fall in love with them? Really, it's hard. You know? I mean, like for example, right now it's easy for us to say, yes, I love Ahlul Bayt. But if Imam Ali was around you, it might not be that easy. Why is he so strict? So get consolation, really, consolation in the fact that he loves you. Really, he loves you, my friend. Get consolation in that fact. That's important. If you can at least understand that much, that yes, he loves me, that's enough. Allah didn't send you here to fall in love with them. Allah sent you here so that you can find those who love you. That's much easier to do. Look around the world, look around people, look around history, and see who's the one who loved you. And when you come to that conclusion, then you will see, wow, that's easy. They love me. Rasulullah loved me. Imam Ali loved me. Hazrat Fatima loved me. And when you come to that conclusion, it's easy for us to build ourselves from there. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. Now this goes so deep in our life that we end up having the wrong ideology in our mind regarding truth, falsehood, how to walk on the right path. Let me ask an important question that every one of you should have in your mind. Do you want to be successful? No, you want to fail? Do you want to be successful? Yes, very good. So, since you want to be successful, you see, here's the thing. You want to be successful. Actually, this is a loaded question. What it's saying is that you're not successful right now. And you need to do something to become successful. Tell me, what's a greater success than knowing that your creator is in love with you? What's a greater success than that? My friends, really, what success are you going after? Allah is in love with you. Now what are you after? Yes, now there's other thing. Now you're just saying, I love you too. You're not saying to Allah, I love you. Allah is saying, I love you. You're saying, I love you too. We have to respond to Allah. We have to respond to Ahlul Bayt. That's why, you know, you see what the right mode of operation is. That's how we function. That's how we go towards Allah and Ahlul Bayt, recognizing that they love us. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. All right, here the question is, how do we come to that realization that Allah loves us? Now, it should be apparent for us, it should be clear for us, but it's not. And the reason is that, be honest, how many of us have thought and worked our life and went through our life knowing that Allah loves me? If we haven't, then my friends, it's not something that's apparent. This idea of knowing that Allah loves me is something that we need to reach. We need to grasp it. Because without it, really, we are not growing. We are getting frustrated, angry, and we are like, you know, when is it all going to end? This should not be a relationship with Allah. That's a very bad way to have a relationship with Allah. Always complaining to Allah, Allah, how long do I have to do this? Until when? I'm losing my hair. Growing old. You know? Until when I have to do this? I mean, this sort of attitude is really bad for our spirit and our relationship with Allah. So how can we reach this realization that Allah, you love me? How do I know that? How can I reach that? Well, here is where we need to get some help and ask Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam. You know, so here Imam explains to us, how do we get to that stage of recognizing that Allah loves me? He says, "Inna ulil albab," those who are intelligent, meaning the intelligent people, people who use their brains, right? Use their brains, who take the time off from Facebook and WhatsApp to actually use their brain, right? Those are ulul albab, right? In modern terms, right? How do you understand that? That's how you understand it, right? You know, so what happened is that this is the new way to not use your brain. There are older ways that were there, but this is the new way of not using your brain and just being fed. So now, in this way, if you just use your brain, those who use their brain, a little bit intelligent that they are, he says, "Alladhina amilu bil fikra." He says, these are people who lead their life, or their practice, their modus operandi is thinking. It's fikr, they think. They do things through thinking, by using their brain, by analyzing things, and they think, they do fikr. This is it, my friends. Imam Sadiq is saying that, listen, intelligent people, they practice by thinking. They don't practice by just being fed and they are running like sheep. They think. They analyze. They look around. They try to see different angles to things. They try to absorb different perspectives. You know, you see, for example, you will know a thinker. For example, when you give him another opinion that you have or a perspective that you have, he actually looks into it. And he says, all right, you know, interesting you say that. Let me think about it. right? You see a person who doesn't think when he says that, no, I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm not going to listen to you, no matter what you say, right? And they go by many words, you know, like hardliners, you know, or something like that. They go by that, you know, that's like, that's it. My way is right, and I don't want to know any other way. These are people who have stopped thinking. They don't want to think anymore, right? So people who think, Imam is saying that thinking is their way. You need to think. You need to use your mind. You need to use a fikr. And then what will happen? Then Imam goes on and says, Warithu, hatta warithu minhu hubballah. And by thinking, they reach, they come to, or they realize that Allah loves them. How do you know that Allah loves you? By thinking. Think. Here, I want to stop over here. Just something I need to add here so that some doubts can be dispelled. Some, you know, people think that in order to go to Allah, Allah has kept these secrets in far hidden places. You know, in far hidden places where you have to go and get it from someone. Your growth and your coming to Allah, my friends, is not anywhere. You will not find it anywhere. It's not in China. It's not in Iran. And it's certainly not in Saudi. Right? You want to get closer to Allah, you want to get somewhere to Him, the secret of that is not hidden as a treasure where you have to go and search and hunt and find it. If Allah had done that, it would be so wrong on His part to do something like that. It's so wrong to do something on this part. You know, you think that going towards Allah and making your relationship with Allah is hidden in the Hawza? That's what some people might want you to think. But if Allah did that, really He would be doing wrong with us. Why? Because Allah, I don't have the, you know, the money to buy the ticket to get to Qum and Najaf. So, well, if you don't have the money to buy the ticket to get to Qum and Najaf, too bad. Tough luck. He can't come to me now. Really, do you think Allah would do that to us? This, now from here, I'm not going to say anything. I want you to think. Is Allah going to do something like that to us to hang our salvation in a place that we cannot reach or is difficult for us to go to? I think, my friends, really understand this. Or do you think that Allah has put everything that we need to get to Him within ourselves? What do you say? What do you think? What do you think is right? I want you to use your mind. I can give off hadith like that, but the hadith won't be that influential if you don't reach that conclusion. Think about it. Do you think that Allah will put your salvation in the hand of someone else? You know, for example, you know, I mean, in my debates with the Christians, you know, they came up with this whole idea that, you know what, in order to be saved, you have to know that Jesus died for your sins. I said, all right, you know, so I'm hearing it from you. Now, if I use my mind, am I going to reach that conclusion? What faculty do I have within myself that I can use to reach that story that you're saying? They said, no, you can't reach it through your mind or your heart or anything like that. You have to just accept what we are saying. So I said, so God put my salvation in your hands? What are you talking about? So I need to accept your story in order to be saved? What kind of, you know, what kind of bad salesmanship is that? I mean, you know, even used auto salesmen aren't that crazy, you know, to put a pitch like that. And you're putting a pitch like that to me, you know, I mean, really, would God do that? That my salvation is only because if your church happens to come to my village in Africa, then I'll be saved? You see, it can't be. Salvation, our najat, and our success, Allah has to put that within ourselves. That's why the hadith says, anyone who knows himself knows his Rabb. Man arafa nafsahu. Everything you need to know about Allah is within yourself. It's your thinking. Your growing is in your thinking. You think and you'll grow. It's within yourself. It's not with me, oh, Maulana is here, we're going to get closer to Allah. No. I am closer to Allah by me being here. Right? You're going to get closer to Allah by you thinking. And when you think, when I think, then we start getting closer to Allah. That's what the Imam is saying. Your growth, your nurturing, you recognizing that Allah loves you can only come about by you thinking. So my friends, let's think for a while. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Okay, now how do you think? So my friends, understand the order of our discussion. First is, our salvation is through Allah's love. How do you reach Allah's love? Through thinking. Now, how do you think? Now, let's go forward. Allah here tells that in an ayat of the Quran. How do you think? Right? He says, وَيَتَفَكَّرُونَ These people, they think. وَيَتَفَكَّرُونَ فِي خَلْقِ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ They think about the creation of the heavens and the earth. They think, heavens, earth, everything has been created. All of these has created. And then they reach the conclusion, Rabbana, ma khalaqta hadha batila. Allah, you did not create this as a joke, or in vain, or without purpose. They reach this conclusion. Allah is saying, how should you think? You know how you should think? My friends, first of all, think about creation. About your creation. Why were you created? So now no more hadith. Let's think from now. And I want you to think with me. And you can just tell me, you know, Maulana, you're wrong. Right? And I'll, okay, you know, say, okay, let's see why. We're thinking now. Let's put on our thinking cap. Right? And let's start thinking. How do you think? For example, Allah created this. Why do you think Allah created all of this? First of all, you know, accept the fact that He created. I don't want to go into that whole discussion on atheism and all that, right? Whether this was created or not, right? That's so foolish, inshallah, I don't even go into that, right? But let's say it's created, right? And let's say we are created. So now, if you accepted that fact, why did Allah create us? Why did Allah create us? Tell me. Let me go through some reasons. Youngsters, you can pay attention to this. Why did Allah create us? Do you think Allah created us because He was bored and He wanted some amusement? You know, He was like sitting bored and had nothing to do and, you know, okay, let me just do something, you know, to have fun. Think about it. Do you really think that's the case? That Allah created all of us and all of this just because He wants, you know, He was not amused and wanted to enjoy and have fun, so He just created us. Does your thinking accept that? All right, you know, good. You know, we say, no, how can that be? It's too good, it's too organized, there's too much in it for it to be an amusement. Right? It's too much in it. He likes us to go through hardships in life and cry and lose our loved ones and get tortured in life, pay bills every month. To do what? So just because He's bored, do you really think that's the case? No, can't be the case. All right, let's go forward. Do you think that Allah has created this whole universe because He just wanted to see what happens? You know, He was like, okay, you know what, let me put these people and create them and let's see what happens, who survives. It's like a game for Him and He wants to see who survives, let's see what's going on. Right? It's like, for example, you know, you put like two gladiators in a ring and say, okay, kill each other and let's see who wins. You think that's why Allah created us? Think about it, my friends. And you know, here is where we really need to understand. Because if we haven't come to these conclusions, then really we haven't started growing yet. La ilaha illallah. Then the salawats. My friends, do you think Allah created all of this as an accident? You know, He was like, you know, doing something else and accidentally this was created in some lab. You know, like came to life. No, I mean, that wouldn't be acceptable, right? My friends, if you look at all of these things, why did Allah create you? The only conclusion that a person who thinks will come to at the end is that Allah, you created me because you love me. You love me. That's why you created me. You think that Allah created you because He hates you? And He just wants to put you through misery? These are things that we need to think about. A person, if he doesn't think and reaches the conclusion that Allah, no, you created me because you love me, that's the purpose. You love me and that's why you brought me to life, so that you can show your love to me. Sometimes, let's go a little bit forward and see where thinking and how we should think. Let's say, my friends, in this gathering that we're having, right now in this gathering, who do you think Allah is focusing on amongst us? Who is Allah, you know, focusing and paying attention to? Me. Not me, but... me as an individual. He's focusing on me. Not him, and that's me. When you talk to Allah, you're saying, Allah, I am your focus. You are looking at me. Your attention is towards me. Wow. Allah, you created all of this for me. Don't get others involved for us. No, not for us. Me. My friends, make this relationship, this thinking should lead this relationship to be personal now. A problem that we make is that Islam is, alhamdulillah, Islam came for mankind. No, Islam came for me. That's who it came for, me. I am the focus of Islam. I am the focus of Allah's message. I'm the focus that Allah is putting on me, not anyone else for me, me. And when a person makes Islam and Allah that personal to himself, then, my friends, you will actually understand this relationship that is working. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Have you heard the word ghaflat? How many of you have heard the word ghaflat? You all heard ghaflat, right? Negligence, you know, we say ghafla, you know, ghaflat. You know what that means, ghaflat? Ghaflat means to forget that Allah is focused on you. The minute you forget Allah is focused on you, meaning you as an individual, you are ghafil at that moment. When you say Allah pays attention to us, you're ghafil. When you say that Allah is paying attention to all of us, you're still ghafil. No, Allah, you are paying attention to me, only me. Now you are attentive. Now you're not ghafil. You see, me. And that is, my friends, thinking leads to that. You need to reach that through your thinking. If I tell you, it doesn't help you. If you tell me, it doesn't help me. I need to reach there. That's why the only way to get there is through our thinking. And that's what Allah wants us to do. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. We see the the love of Allah in the rules that Allah has made for us. Look at Allah's love in that. You know, Allah has said, one of the great sins in Islam is so bad that Allah, you know, I alluded that yesterday, I'm going to just mention it so that you can think about it. Allah said, one of the worst sins that you can do is to eat the flesh of your dead brother. Astaghfirullah. Why would I do that for? Oh, that's what you're doing when you do ghibat. You backbite. So, but Allah, you know, obviously you're backbiting about someone who has done something bad, right? A person has done bad. So you're belittling a bad person. You're vilifying someone who's wrong. And Allah, the punishment for that is that much? You know how much the punishment is? It says the riwayat that if you do ghibat of someone, backbite someone. And who are you backbiting? Someone who has done wrong, right? For example, you saw brother, you know, with an open can of Bud. You know, and right away that, you know, you needed to announce that because, you know, the obligation of public announcement was given to you. So you found it to be your obligation and you came forward and started announcing that, brother, you know, I saw him, you know, with my own eyes, you know. Isn't that, you know? Ghibat. You know? Obviously the person is doing wrong. He's doing bad and you're vilifying someone who's bad. But the punishment for that, Imam is saying, riwayat, hadith is saying, that if someone does that and says something wrong about someone, immediately what Allah does is that sin that he has done, whatever sins he has done, Allah erases it from his books and puts it into your books. And, you know, whatever good you have goes over there. On the day of judgment, you know, when you will open your book up, this and that, you know, and say that, you know, Allah, it says I was drinking alcohol. I never drank alcohol, you know. Why is this? There must be something wrong. Someone else's book. Mistake over here. Someone else's book came over here, you know, this and that. No. Your books, you know, someone else's were written there because you were doing ghibat of that person. Your things came over there. And you're like, but, you know, the angels are cooking books now, you know. What is that? Yes, this is the only sin that leads to your books being distorted. Such a bad sin, right? Allah, why did you do that? Someone who's already bad. And I'm saying something bad about someone who's bad. And the sin and the punishment for that is so great, so big. La ilaha illallah. Why is that? And why is that? You know what? Here, you see, look at it, think about it. Why is Allah making this sin such a grave sin? In fact, you want to know something about ghibat? Here's the thing. If Allah had allowed ghibat to be done, if Allah allowed us to talk bad about all the other mu'mineen and to say to other people whatever wrong they did, you know, then no one would be doing wrong. Really? No one would do wrong. People will be too afraid to do wrong because everyone's going to talk about him. If Allah had, for example, allowed ghibat, Allah, if you had just allowed ghibat, allowed me to talk bad about someone, you think that he's going to do bad? You see, why, for example, in the West, everyone hides and does everything. Why don't they do it openly? You see, a lot of public figures like that, they keep a clean slate outside. Inside, it's a, you know, Halloween. It's dangerous inside in their lives, in their private lives, right? But outside, they keep a very clean slate and this and that. Why are they so afraid to do things out in the open, that which they openly do inside? Because over here, you're allowed to talk anything you want against anyone. If they do something, even a minute thing, wrong in front of the public, oh, the indignancy of the media, you know? Oh, they will be so upset at you. How dare he, you know, does this in front of everyone. My friends, they're doing ghibat, and ghibat stops sins. Doing ghibat will stop sins. So Allah, why are you not allowing us to do ghibat? That will pressure people from not doing anything wrong. Do you see this? You see how this is being taught? Look at this very carefully. And now I want you to understand this, my friend. You see how this sin of ghibah is so important and so much emphasized. And for what? You know why Allah is saying? Allah is saying, listen. No. I am dealing with that person, not you. Don't interfere in my dealing. I'm dealing with you. That person, that day, I'm dealing with. That's just like I'm dealing with you. And no, I don't allow anyone to interfere between me and my servant. He has done wrong. Don't you think I know that? Don't you think I know that? Of course I know that. So why are you doing this? Saying these things. Imagine this, my friends. How much love Allah has for each and every one of us that He is not allowing anyone to disrespect this personal relationship that Allah has with you. This is Allah's love. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. You know, because of the fact that Allah loves you so much, He has made Jahannam for your sins. Why do you think sins, when you do something wrong, for example, Allah is saying Jahannam, hellfire. What do you think hellfire for your sins? Everyone's like, hellfire for... Because of the fact He loves you so much. Let me give an example. And maybe from there you can compare it. If someone here... Someone here, let's say, talks loudly and starts cursing his mother. Someone here just says, you know, just say, shut up, you old lady. Now, those who hear it, how would you feel? Like disgusted, right? You're feeling disgusted. Why are you feeling disgusted? One, because he said that, and the other is because you're saying it to your mother. This is your mother. What's so important about that? But she loves you. I mean, if there's anyone in this world who loves an ugly person like you, it's your mother. Just be thankful you have someone who loves you, man. Because looking at how ugly you are, you're not going to find any other person to love you. And the only one who loves you, you're the one vilifying her, saying bad things about her. You see how bad it becomes? Your actions become worse when you do it against someone who loves you so much. Friends, this is why when you sin against Allah, it is so bad, because He loves you too much. And you will be like looking at that and saying, wow, I sinned against Him? Allah, you love me so much and I did this to you? This is what happens, my friends. It is bad. And this is where you see the love of Allah pulls us. La ilaha illallah. All right, you know, just one more thing, and inshallah we'll go and finish for today, right? Hadith from Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Now let's send a louder salawat. And obviously I'm not asking you to send salawat just because I want to, you know, get some time to breathe or take a break. Right? Because we're going to learn from Ahlul Bayt and Islam. And Islamic knowledge sometimes requires us to be enlightened. You know, to have the ability to take it, to understand it, to grasp it. And a person increases his ability to learn through salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. This hadith Imam said, that Allah has said, that's Hadith Qudsi. Allah has said this, and the Imam is quoting this. He says, Al-Khalqu Ayali. Al-Khalqu Ayali. Fa'ahabbahum ila إِلَيَّ أَلْتَفَهُمْ. That creation is my family. Allah is saying, is my family. My family means people that I am concerned about, that I love. My creation is my family. Read this creation. And then, the ones I love the most amongst them, meaning amongst my creation, the ones I love the most amongst them are the ones who serve my creation. Who serve my creation. My friends, La ilaha illallah. Sadaqah. When you give sadaqah to someone, charity someone, it removes 70 bala, 70 afflictions and sufferings. Try it. Sadaqah. You give sadaqah to get that bala that might have been coming your way to go away. It's like, for example, a way to thwart tornadoes. You know, if a tornado is coming your way, right away give zakat and you'll see it'll go away somewhere else. Right? This is how Allah is saying. It removes 70 afflictions, sufferings, just like that. Sadaqah. Loans are more emphasized and have a greater value than sadaqah. Giving a loan to a brother who's in need has so much value. If a person knows it, he would be giving loans left and right. You know? And so, I will not teach you that, otherwise you'll be like Maulana, then we'll have to give loans left and right. But if you knew how much it is to give qarz-e hasana, to give a loan to someone, so much reward in that, Allah has kept. As long as that loan is with Him, you are protected from so many things. As long as that loan is in it. The minute you take it back, the effect is finished. Guarantee over. Right? But as long as it's with Him, as a loan, you know what? You're protected. La ilaha illallah. Helping people in their affairs. All of these things. You see the importance of this in Islamic law. How much Islam has emphasized serving others. Why? Because my friends, if you want to get closer to Allah, you cannot go closer to Allah through prayer or fasting or any of these things. You want spirituality, it happens when you start serving Allah's creation. This is where growth comes. This is where prayers are going to find meaning. This is where your fasting is going to make sense. This is when your du'as are going to become real. This is where it happens, when you start serving others. Doing for others. Making your heart want to do things for others. Not just Shias or Muslims, anyone. Allah is not saying, hey listen, this group of creation is mine. Allah is not, you know, there's no discrimination when it comes to Allah. You know, we might be racist or bigots or something like that, right? Allah doesn't discriminate. All of you are the same, but the best amongst you are the ones who serve others the most. That's why you see this false idea of taqwa that people have, that you know what, they don't want to get involved in communities or take any posts, you know, or be involved in the politics of masjids and this and that. Why? Don't you see that this is how you get closer to Allah? But then people will talk bad about us, or they'll say things about us. Yes. But that's how you get there. That's all true, but that's how you get there. You want more spirituality, take a responsibility, and then you will see how much that prayer is going to mean to you. If a person actually takes it for that reason. You know, if you just want to have power over other people, that's a whole different story. But if you actually do it, Allah, I'm going to get closer to you by taking responsibility and by doing things. Then you see that spirituality dawns into us. La ilaha illallah. Creation is my family. How you deal with Allah's family, my friends, that is what will decide you. La ilaha illallah. I will stop over here, inshallah. Sometimes we have the wrong idea about Allah. We have a very wrong idea about Allah. You know what we think Allah is? We think that Allah is a cop. Some of us think that. We think Allah is a cop who's waiting to catch us as the criminal. You know, cops do that, right? They're looking for criminals. If a criminal walks by a cop, you see, because of that guilty conscience that he has, he just walks, you know, looking around. You know, and the cop looks at him, "What are you looking at?" And he's like looking at that. We think that Allah is the same thing. Allah, you know, I mean, I did wrong. And really, you think Allah is looking at you like that? Or we think that Allah is a judge. You're not a judge when you go as a criminal, convicted person to in front of a judge. You see that he is, you know, looking at you and you feel guilty because you have done the crime. We think that Allah is a judge. Tell me, how many of us think that Allah is a judge waiting to judge us, or Allah is a cop waiting to catch us? And if we have this relationship with Allah, we will never be happy with Him. We will never be happy to meet Him. Or do you think that Allah is like a loving parent who's waiting for his children to come back? La ilaha illallah. Let's look at this. I'll explain this more tomorrow. What this means and how we build this love and how reach this love, because it's important in our lives. And I want us to understand love, because that's how we will be happier in life. Every hardship will become easy for us. Really it will, my friends. Then maybe we can understand that, you know, our viewpoint might change and we will look at things. We will look at things in a different way. You know, when you look at Karbala, what do you see? Truly, what do you see? When you look at Karbala, what are you looking at when you see Karbala? Do you see something that is grotesque, violent, difficult to handle? Really, it is difficult. I agree with you. It is difficult to handle. You know, it's not easy looking at Karbala. It goes against our very conscience looking at Karbala. But our outlook has to be raised a little bit more. When I look at Karbala, I don't know what I am thinking. I might be thinking any of these things that I've mentioned. Maybe my outlook is wrong. Maybe my viewpoint is wrong. What am I missing? You know, when Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, Lanatullah alayhi, when he spoke of Karbala to the caravan, to the prisoners, he said, "Allah did so wrong to you all. It's bad what Allah did to you. It's bad what Allah did to you." It's taunting. In a taunting tone, he tells the caravan that, you know what, Allah did so bad. Look at this. Such a horrible way to die. Such a bad way to end your lives. You have to just say that Allah did it. Allah did this to you. This grotesque, this violent ending that your family faces, Allah's doing it. That was his viewpoint. He is giving his viewpoint to you. And when Zainab heard that, you know what she said? He says, "Ma ra'aytu illa jameela." I did not see anything but a masterpiece in art. It was so beautiful. Zainab, what was beautiful? How are you looking at it? What is your viewpoint, Zainab? I want to learn that. I want to learn that how is it that a six-month-old child just wanting a drop of water to live and a few drops of water to survive and being shot with an arrow is anything but beautiful? How are you looking at it as beautiful? Now you see what happens when a person actually has the right viewpoint in life. Friends, this is what's happening. You know, this is hard. It's not easy, you know. Any father who are holding children right now, if your child even gets a little bit thirsty, if he gets a little bit thirsty or, you know, wants something, right away you feel in you the pain and you go right away and start to do something for him, right? Do something for him. Imam Hussein just took his child out there. And you know how he explained his child, right? How he explained his child, he says, you know, to the people, don't you see how thirsty he is? He asked the people, don't you see how thirsty he is? He asked the people that, and then he gives an example. He gives an example to demonstrate how thirsty this child is, this Ali Asghar is, how thirsty he is. He gives an example and says, you know, he is so thirsty, he is like a fish that has come out of water. When a fish has come out of water, you see, the fish starts to die. It needs water to survive. When the fish comes out of water, it is starting to die. And there are different stages of its death. The first stage of the death of a fish is that the fish jumps up and down. You see, it jumps up and down in order to announce to the world that it is dying. Please give me some water. And then after that, you see, the fish starts to turn left and right. It starts to turn left and right because it doesn't have the energy to jump up and down anymore. It turns left and right to show that I'm on my way to death. Give me some water. Put me inside of water. And then after that, it loses its energy to such an extent that now the fish is not even turning left and right. It starts to open its mouth and close its mouth. Open its mouth and close its mouth. It means that it's going towards the ending of its stages. And then they said that the last stage of a fish's death is that now it doesn't have the power to even open its mouth or the energy to open its mouth. You know, now the fish just opens its eyes and closes it. Opens its eyes and closes it. That's the last stage of the fish's death. A fish dies, this is the last stage. The fish just opens its eyes and closes it. Imam Hussein is saying that Ali Asghar is so thirsty that now he doesn't have power to jump up and down or cry or do anything. Don't you see he's just opening his eyes and closing it? How can one not feel pain for that? How can one not feel pain for that, my friends? This is hard. This is what's hard. You see, when Allah loves you, and if you recognize that, no one knows that how much Ahlul Bayt have given for Allah. Allah is willing to sacrifice anything for them. Allah is willing to sacrifice anything for them. You know, don't you think, right now, think about it. Don't you think that if Imam Zainul Abideen, if he just asked Allah, Allah, stop this. Allah, stop this. Ya Allah, this is the haram of Rasulullah. Please do not let us go through this. Don't you think Allah will put an end to everything? He would have destroyed everything. He would have destroyed each and every one of them. Imam Sajjad, just one gesture and Allah's punishment will come down. Just one gesture and Allah's punishment will come down, my friends. This is how Allah is. And that's why Imam Hussein told Zainab and said, Zainab, do not give any curse. Do not say any lan to these people because Allah has been so much in love with you that anything that you will say, Allah will answer you right away. La ilaha. La ilaha illallah. Just a few words I will say regarding Imam Sajjad. That's it, my friends. Imam Sajjad. You know, what he went through, Imam Sajjad, and what he faced from Karbala all the way through this tragedy. Just a few things I will say. And inshallah, alhamdulillah, we have Hajaga here. We'll come there, inshallah, bless us, you know, with other things. You know, Imam Sajjad, on Ashura, he was woken up by Imam Hussein once, and the second time he was woken up was by Zainab Kubra. When Hazrat Zainab Kubra woke up Imam Sajjad looked up to her and said, what's happening? Zainab said that the tents are on fire. They are on fire. What should we do? Should we stay here and die? Or should we go outside? What should we do? Imam Sajjad said, it's wajib to save our lives. Go outside. And that's how all the ladies and the children started running outside the tents. They scattered into the battlefield. And then as the tents were put ablaze, Hamid ibn Muslim says that I saw a woman going into a blazing tent and coming out. I thought that she has gone crazy. Let me go and help her to see what happened. Let me save her life. I went closer to see why is she going back in a burning tent. Is she going there to commit suicide or to kill herself? Why is she going back? When I came closer, I saw that this is the sister of Hussein Zainab. She was going inside a burning tent. And when she went inside, I came closer to see what she's doing inside, to bring her outside. And then what I saw is that she's carrying a young man on her back. She's carrying a young man on her back out of this burning tent. Zainab al-Kubra is carrying Imam Sajjad to safety. This is how Imam Sajjad started his house. Imam Sajjad, when he came out, still he is sick. His sickness is such that he's like unconscious. And then he falls into sajda. And he stays in that sajda, in that way, until it said that they came to him. And when these people came, when they came and saw, and they tried to gather all the people as prisoners, they saw Imam Sajjad. They pulled the mat from under him. They asked him to get up, but he couldn't get up, so they picked him up and they said, who is this person? Then Shimr came and he said, who is this person? They said, this is the son of Hussein. He says, why is he alive? Kill him. As soon as he said that, Zainab jumped in front of Imam Sajjad and said, you will have to kill me before you kill my nephew. You'll have to kill me before you kill him. Then they backed off. She jumped in with such fury, they backed off and said, all right, leave him alone. Enough killing, leave him alone. So they left him. But they said, all right, we will take care of him. We will not kill him, we will take care of him. You know how they took care of him? Imam Sajjad is too weak to even stand up. He's too weak to even walk. So the first thing they did is that they put chains on his feet. They put chains on his feet, and these chains are heavy. Then they tied his hands, cuffed his hands, and then after they cuffed his hands, they put a neck brace on his shoulder made of wood, like a plank. They put that on his shoulder and then said, now you walk with us. And they made him walk. But Imam Sajjad is too sick to even stand up. So he's stumbling. He takes a few steps and he falls down. Then again they come up, get up. He takes a few steps and this time the neck brace falls down. And when the neck brace falls down, they said, put it on again. They put it on, but again it falls down. They said, how can we keep this in place so it doesn't fall down? You know what they came up with? They came up with a plan to make sure that his wooden neck brace doesn't fall off his neck. You know what they did? They drove nails into that neck brace, into his neck. They drove nails and it went into the flesh of his neck. To such an extent that these nails were put inside there. And to such an extent was the effect of this injury that even after he went back to Medina and when he met his uncle Muhammad Hanafiya and when Muhammad Hanafiya came to embrace him, he held his neck and Imam Sajjad started crying in pain. He says, what happened? He says, this neck brace that was on my neck. Ajarakum Allah, Ajarakum Allah, my friend. Now you see Imam Sajjad, then they put the neck brace on him. He is too even sick to stand up. So now the pain from the nails in the neck brace on one side, the chains on his feet and the handcuffs, now they make him walk. And he walks a few feet and stumbles again. And they get tired of this. So now you know what they do? They come to him. And after that they say, all right, if you don't get up, we know how to make you get up. So every time Imam Sajjad would fall down, they would take a whip and start hitting him until he stands up. Imam Sajjad is now on the ground, and as they are whipping him, the lashes from the whip are going into his skin, and Imam Sajjad musters up his energy to stand up again so they can stop whipping. Then he walks a few feet and again he falls down. Again he falls down, and again this is happening, and it keeps on happening until Shimr comes back and sees, what is the delay? What's keeping you up? You see, they say, well, this person, he's unable to walk. He's not able to do this. So they said, all right, keep him walking. Shimr walks with him and he takes a few lashes at Imam Sajjad. As he takes a few lashes, you see that at that moment, Sakina, the sister of Imam Sajjad, is looking at Imam Sajjad and crying. She is crying. And as she cries, Imam Sajjad is giving her glances, trying to avoid looks from her. You know why he was avoiding the looks? Because you see, when Shimr saw Sakina looking at Sajjad and crying, he said, who is this girl? And what's her relationship to Sajjad? They said, well, she is the sister of Imam Sajjad. She is the daughter of Hussein. Shimr said, all right, now I know how to make him walk. That was the worst knowledge Shimr could have had, because now every time Imam Sajjad fell down, Shimr would go to Sakina and says, if you don't get up, he would start slashing Sakina. He would start blessing Sakina. How much did Imam Sajjad go to? So much that he went to. For 35 years he was crying. What was Imam Sajjad saying? Every time he would see a glass of water, he starts to cry. Imam Sajjad, what are you crying for? Every time they say that he goes past a butcher shop in Medina, they would close down the shop. They would close down the shop and they would ask him, why are you closing the shop? Don't you see who Ali ibn Hussein is coming here? And so why? Because every time he sees a slaughtered animal, every time he sees a slaughtered animal, he comes to us and tells us, did you give him water before you slaughter him? They said, yes, we are the followers of your grandfather. We gave enough water for the sheep until it looked three ways. Oh, how good you are. How good you are. Because my father was killed thirsty. Without water, he was slaughtered.
Muhammad Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam.